to Muffin Talk. Kia ora and welcome to Muffin Talk. This radio program is brought to you by the initiative Titi Paunamo, Study and Joy. Muffin Talk is a weekly radio program to which I invite guests to talk about their work and their passion for issues on community programs, social justice, Bible studies, or the interfaith relations. Today, I have invited Jill Shaw to a Zoom recording for a broadcast. Jill, a warm welcome and hi to my radio program.
Thank you. Very nice to be here.
Jill Shaw is a Christian chaplain at Massey University in Auckland, offering spiritual support for people of all faiths and none. Currently, Jill is part of a project that is called Inclusive Faith. Behind the project are the Ministry of Social Development, the Ministry for Disabled People, Yes Disability, Inclusive Aotearoa Collective, and the Religious Diversity Center, the RDC. Jill, can you tell us more about this project and how it started?
I wasn't in on the very beginning. I was brought in a little bit later to play my position. But it came out of some conversations, unfortunately, after the shootings in Christchurch. And there were a lot of conversations about, you know, now, unfortunately, we have more disabled people. The mosques and the Muslim community, all the communities in Christchurch and around New Zealand really came together beautifully, you know, to support the victims and the impacted communities at the time. But then as there have been inquiries and as projects and conversations and consultations have flowed out, their different needs have been identified. And so in this project, we're not just focusing on the Muslim community, but we are wondering how faith communities disable people unnecessarily. And so we wanted to pursue ways that we can flip that around.
So when you say of disabled people, that includes all disabled, physical and mental, and any disability?
Yes, I've learned so much in this project. So if I misspeak or get something wrong, I hope your listeners will know that it's just my ignorance, you know, as I'm still learning as we go. But yes, it is all disabilities, both those that someone was born with and those that were acquired. It does include the elderly. The elderly increasingly have disabilities that as I get older, I live as if, you know, that won't happen to me. And so it's easy for me to ignore some disabilities. And then later on in life, I might end up in a similar situation and think, oh, I should have paid attention. I should have been kinder, you know, along the way. So yes, all disabilities. It can be sensory. It can be mobility, neurodiverse, hidden disabilities. That's a new thing that I've learned about. So yes, all disabilities. How can they fully participate in their faith communities without too much focus on their disability, but more celebration and good use of their ability?
That sounds really good. And what was the first impression by people when you brought up that topic? Are you the when you heard about the project and you got involved and you talked to the first people, what did they say?
Some people were fascinated that there would be such a big project that focused in any way on religion. Many times we want to say we will support, you know, the security of people, maybe the housing of people, their financial well-being, nutrition, health, you know, different things. But the religious side of people is so often, or the spiritual side is so often ignored. And yet we have Sir Mason Drury's model of the Te Whare Tapawha, where there's the four different components to who it is, you know, to be Māori and to be a human. Even in my work as a chaplain at the university, so many times, the essence of humanity, the spirit, is just ignored. And we're kind of turned into useful or not useful, productive or not productive. Yeah, it's fascinating how that part is often ignored. So that's often a response to it. The other thing is, are there that many disabled people who are religious? Well, when you look at the number of people in society, in our society here in New Zealand, who are religious or spiritual, 3/4 of New Zealanders will put down on the census a faith tradition or background of some sort. And if you think about the statistics of people who are disabled, and you think they have certain impairments that potentially limit how they engage in the world around them. Wouldn't it be lovely if they had all the resources and assets of their spirituality to support them as they go forward? So whether they are spiritual or whether they have a formal religion, they're part of an organized religion, wouldn't it be a comfort and a joy for them to be able to have full access to all of who they are?
But also, I think that when you're talking about spiritual spiritual approaches and your faith, that has nothing to do with your physical ability, for example, or with your mental ability, because that's the beauty of spirituality.
That's right. Yeah. But what we find sometimes is people in the disability sector, sometimes people in government, find it a bit awkward to talk about religion. And so that's why they brought me into the project. Because I'm a chaplain, I'm a little bit comfortable with talking about religious diversity. And though I cannot be all things to all people, I find that spiritual people, religious people, tend to respect spirituality and religion in somebody else, even if it's a vastly different faith. It doesn't matter. We have in common this other element, you know, of who we are. But sometimes people in government or even the disability sector, they don't quite know what to do with religious people. So they brought me into the project to kind of manage that. And then the other thing that's interesting is sometimes religious people don't necessarily know what to do with disabled people. And so we almost, it's not exactly cross-cultural or intercultural, but it is sometimes talking past each other. And so one of my roles is, I guess, as an intermediary, as an intercultural communicating facilitator between it all. And like I said, I've been learning heaps. I'm no expert. I'm just a little bit more comfortable in the conversation. So I'm okay with asking questions and hopefully learning as I go.
So tell me, what have you done so far? How far is the project? And so what steps have been taken so far?
The project is a series of HUI in different places around the country from which we will get input mostly largely from disabled people about how they have been disabled, you know, in accessing their faith communities. So we want to hear about their experiences, good experiences of positive inclusion, some other things where it could have gone better, and then their hopes and their dreams. We're also inviting faith leaders or faith champions into these conversations. One, so they can hear directly from disabled people. But two, so that when the resource that we prepare from this project is finished, we hope to launch it on December 3rd, the International Day of Disabilities. When this resource is launched, we want faith champions, influential people in different faith communities, to be able to say, hey, we want a copy of that. We want to be able to use this resource to co-design a pathway forward with the people in our community, or maybe even with people who've not been part of our community because we excluded them unintentionally. Mm-hmm. And so the real purpose of the project is full participation, but the resource is going to be the means. It's going to be the map or the pathway for faith leaders.
So you just mentioned the different HUI. So
right,
HUI in Auckland.
So we had one in Palmerston North, and that was just beautiful. It was just a beautiful, lovely group of people that I got to meet whom I wouldn't have otherwise. It was just a lovely day. And then we had one HUI in Auckland, and that was a strident conversation. That was very informative. Then today, tonight, actually, August 3rd, we're having a HUI here in Wellington. On the 10th of August will be the Waikato, and then we'll be going down to Christchurch, Dunedin, a couple of HUI up north. And then we hope to have one more HUI in Auckland with maybe some young people, some young leaders in the disability sector to hear from them. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we want to get information because this resource must be informed by the people who are most affected. And so we want to hear from disabled people. We will then co-design the resource, and then we just have to figure out the best way to distribute, communicate, implement the resource across Aotearoa.
Can you tell us more about the HUI? How are they organized? How are they structured?
So we try to make sure that we have a good number of both faith champions or influential people within their communities. Those could be pastoral care people, social services deliverers, you know, whatever, and then disabled people. So we gather together in the beginning just to eyeball each other and kind of get the sense of it all. Then we break up into two different groups. And I generally go with the faith champions, and we just discussed terminology. At one of our HUI, somebody who was well-meaning but uninformed, as I am, said something about, well, the normal people and then the others. Well, that's the very kind of languaging that really excludes, even on a social level or an attitudinal level. And the man was well-meaning. He just didn't know the terminology yet. So I'm helping to inform about the terminology. I'm also trying to help faith champions, faith leaders, sometimes religious leaders, understand a bit more about co-design. If we design, if I as a non-disabled person design a pathway for a disabled person without consulting the disabled person, I'm likely to not get that right. Hmm. So the co-design, we don't do things for disabled people. We do things with disabled people. And the other thing that I've learned is no two disabled people experience their disability in exactly the same way. So we might have two people in using wheelchairs. We might have two people who are deaf. But that doesn't mean that we just do the same thing for all of them and that works and that's okay. So a certain degree of empathy is necessary. We have to sit alongside. We have to listen. We have to understand from their perspective, not just imagining how it might be, but actually understanding from their perspective. And then the best thing I've learned, I think, is if we don't know what to do to help or enable or facilitate, all we have to do is ask. We just ask the person in front of us, how can I be of assistance? You know, can I be of assistance? And then they will either say yes or no, or they will tell us exactly how. And so that's been really beautiful for me to see. Just relax, just have the conversation, and we learn as we go. Yeah, it's been beautiful.
I think that some places of worship would have, for example, added ramps to their buildings to access properly. But this is not just for those with a permanent disability, but there are a lot of people who break their leg or who have a temporary disability, and they are really grateful for. So
yes,
I think if people are aware that it can be very good for any one of us.
Yeah, you know, and it is about ramps. It is about the mobility. But what I've learned is that often is just a tick box. Mm-hmm. You know, we have ramps. What else do you need? Well, if we have someone who's not blind, but they're low vision, if we can make the font on our documents, you know, our service folders that we might have or programs we might do or the screens that might be shown, if we can make the font larger, 16 point or larger, and if we can be careful about the fonts we use so that they're more readable, so much better. If somebody, you know, is blind, if we can just make sure that we don't create more obstacles that are absolutely necessary and accommodate the dog. Now, there was a lovely, lovely conversation that I had with one of the Muslim leaders. And I said, they were going to host our event. And I said, well, one of the people coming will need to bring her dog. And he said, oh, okay, my understanding is growing. He didn't say no. He said, my understanding is growing. I just thought, what a beautiful example of, you know, of this project already bearing fruit before we've even produced a resource or anything. And so he started talking about other blind people who might want to come to the mosque to pray. And how could that be accommodated? And he thought maybe they could just get a couple of crates with some blankets and bowls of water or something, just in the very first door inside the building. And if the dogs could go in there and the dogs wouldn't go anywhere near the prayer space where people would be uncomfortable, you know, with both cultural and religious restrictions on things, then could that work? You know, and so he just was so willing to find a way to say yes and a way to be inclusive. That spirit is really what we need. It's attitudinal, not just ramps. Yeah.
Yes. What is the response from the disabled people that you've talked to so far? So one thing is what you mentioned, what we can do in order to be really inclusive. But what were the suggestions? I understand that each person is different.
Yes.
And this, whatever disability, but also from a personal point of view. So can you tell us more about the disabled people?
Some have just been so grateful that we're even asking the questions, that this project is recognizing this need. So they're just really grateful. And they too want to know, where did it come from? You know, the Ministry of Social Development, it makes sense that it would come out of the Ministry of Disabled Peoples. But, you know, these other things, they're just so grateful, you know, that they're being recognized. Some of them have been fighting this battle for quite a long time to be included. Able people disable other people. We all assume that, and we live in a world that is designed by people who assume that we're all the same, you know, and that we can all reach that button to open the door or not or whatever. And so the disabled people are just so relieved to not have to fight in this particular arena, though some of them are champions. And they've been fighting these battles for a long time because they've been excluded. They haven't been able to live a full life. So sometimes they come into the meetings and it takes a little while for them to realize that we actually want to hear from them. They're not going to be sidelined or marginalized. One of the young ladies said, I want to sing. And I auditioned for a role in the worship team at my church, but then they never called me back. And at the end of our session, she was a beautiful Maori woman. And at the end of our session, one of the other people said, will you sing for us as we go? Will you sing a waiata as we leave? She has the most amazingly beautiful voice. The fact that she cannot see ought not to limit her contribution to her church. Another fascinating thing that I've learned in the course of this project is the Prophet Muhammad came across a blind man early on in the history of Islam. He came across a blind man, and I don't mean to speak for Islam and the history of Islam. I might not get this exactly right, but Muhammad said, what can you do? And this man, you know, talked, and they sat together for a while. And the next thing you know, Muhammad says, you are the one who will call my people to prayer. And he made him the one who did the muezzin call, because he had such a beautiful voice, and he had memorized the Quran. He knew what, you know, so there was no problem with, you know, the contents of his mind, and he became the spokesperson, you know, and I just thought that was beautiful. And Islam has long tried to make use of and do the best they can, you know, with the gifts and abilities, especially with the blind scholars. So it's been lovely. Yeah. I have had a few people challenge me saying, why are we differentiating between the faith champions and the disabled people? Why are we dividing? Because here again, it's supposed to be an inclusive project, but we're excluding, because we actually go into two different groups to have these conversations. Then we come back together. Part of that is so that the faith leaders, faith champions, will get their vocabulary sorted before we join in the conversation. And then the other thing is to make sure that the disabled people feel safe and that their voice is not only is welcome, you know, that we want to hear from them. And so, yeah, that's been part of the conversation. Why have we differentiated? And it's because one group needs some information and the other group we really want to hear information from. So, yeah, that creates our constructive dialogue.
And I also think that if the people don't know each other beforehand, it's good if they know that what the others think in their same group.
Yes.
And so they can raise questions or they can raise concerns in a different way than if everyone thinks that they are on their own.
Yes. Yes, that's true. It gets a little bit of solidarity in the groups. And in that first group that I'm in with the faith champions, I just say, are there any awkward questions you'd really like to ask now? And then we can find a good way to ask those when we go into the other group, but you won't be hesitant to ask. Yeah. You know, we can do that. So. Yeah.
Jill, how do you find the people who come to the Hui? Is this an open event or can you tell us more about it?
It requires registration, so we know how to do the catering, but it is a free event. Disabled people of faith. We're trying to emphasize of faith. It's not just a disability event, but it's for people who would really like to participate in their faith community, which means it's participate in religious organization. We've had some people come along who were spiritual, and they wondered why we weren't including more of spiritualism or spirituality, you know, just other. We tend to find those aren't typically organized religions. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to influence the structures of religious organizations so that they're all aware and doing the best they can to include people. And that'll be interesting when we go up north and talk to people in the Northland on the Marae. And I have a beautiful document that's already been put together by an organization about how to include disabled people in the marae and in the community. And so we'll make use of that as well. But it's interesting because the marae, the Māori would not necessarily, I think, want to say that that is a religious organization. It is everything. From what I understand, Māori, as many indigenous peoples, they don't differentiate between all of these things that Westerners tend to differentiate and say you're physical and you're spiritual and you're this and you're that. But no, they're much more integrated. So that conversation up there will be a serious learning experience for me to understand better how we can include, of course, Māori spirituality in this project, in the resource, but make sure that we're not calling it something that it's not. You know, we want to honor, and we have some beautiful advisors in the project who are helping us with that as well, Tangata Te Whenua, who are going to keep us on the right path. Yeah.
So many of the people who come to the hui, they are recommended, or they come and say, oh, great. Because if you say, you said earlier that some people have been looking for something like that for a long time, but then how do they know that this is on?
Yes, we don't exactly have a database of disabled people of faith. You know, there's not a list like that that we were just able to go. So we've been utilizing our disability partners in each of the cities. So within the disability sector, there are some beautiful disability resource centers. And so we've been sending word out through those, through anybody else I can find online that I can send the invitations to. My job, my role largely has been to try to invite the religious leaders, the faith champions, you know, to come along. And so I've just been sending out word to friends, going through the chaplaincies, going through the Abrahamic interfaith societies or the interfaith networks in each of the different regions. It's been beautiful. So far, we've had very good representation. We haven't yet had any Hindu or Sikh participants, but I really hope that we'll be able to target some of those in some of the cities to come. But otherwise, we've had Baha'i, Buddhist, Muslim, Jewish, three different flavors of Judaism, three different flavors of Muslim, six different flavors of Christians. I hope nobody thinks that's disrespectful. I just find that's a non-judgmental way to talk about the different traditions within the traditions. So yeah, so we're doing fairly well as far as the faith representation, but I'd really love to hear from, because if we hear from all of the faith traditions and have their participation at this stage in the consultation, we hope that will be a lovely pathway for when we want to implement the resource, after December 3rd. People who've participated might then say, right, we did this thing. Now let's see what we can do with it to actually put it into action.
Yeah. So once you've had all this hui, you will have a big document of reports and suggestions and et cetera. And will you go through it then with the participants again? Or are you publishing then the book through Ministry of Social Development?
Yeah, it isn't necessarily going to be a book. Somebody might write it up as a research project, though we didn't start with ethics proposal and all of that in the beginning, but we'll see about that. But the resource, we hope, will actually be a practical tool that can be downloaded, can be printed and handed out to people, that will be put into the hands of a disabled person to be able to walk into their mosque, temple, gurdwara, synagogue, church, you know, whatever. They can walk in with this resource. They can, in a very non-offensive way, approach their faith leader and say, I would really like to participate. Can we find a way forward for me to do so? And so with this document, it could almost be like a roadmap that they would use to co-design a strategy together for better involvement. So yes, this might turn into a conference paper that somebody will do, and that will all be well and good. But my hope and my dream is that disabled people will be enabled people, and that they can fully participate in their communities of faith.
Will the resource also include some glossary where you explain what to say and what not to say, and what words? Yeah, you should.
Yeah, avoid? Very, very likely. The former Office of Disability Issues, now the Ministry for Disabled People, have beautiful documents that really talk about how to have those conversations and the languaging around it. It's on the Office for Disability Issues website, it was under etiquette. And I thought that was lovely. It's hospitality. It's polite. It's how do we have these conversations? So I'm sure the Ministry for Disabled People will have a similar kind of a document. And we will link to all of this. We hope that the Religious Diversity Center will have a link to this resource on your website sometime. We hope FEONS, the New Zealand Muslim Association, the Anglicans, the Catholics, the Buddhists, Baha'i, everybody, we hope that they will all link to this in their denominational and association websites so that it's readily available. Yeah.
I remember that when you mentioned that every case is different, every person is different. I remember that years ago I was working with a man who had lost both legs and he was in a wheelchair. And he always said, I'm not disabled, I just don't have legs. I'm strong, it's not, and the problem for him was in Europe, those with a wheelchair usually had more disabilities than the legs, because if they had lost their legs, they would have prosthesis. Mm-hmm. But being in another country, from his country, that he didn't have the chance to get prosthesis, so he was in the wheelchair, and he always said, don't carry me, I'll do myself, just make sure nobody sees me. So my task was to make sure that he could go to the right place unseen. I think that is one of the examples where you can say, yes, it depends on the person, and it depends on, because you can't just say, this is the disability and this is what you'd have to do. Mm-hmm. And I think listening to each other, that's really important.
Somebody in our last HUI mentioned something that I had never thought of, because the church that I'm part of, I'm usually at the door and I'm welcoming people, you know, come on in, make yourself at home kind of a thing. And this young woman who uses a wheelchair said, when I arrive at an event, I'm usually told where I can sit. Everybody else is told, come in, make yourself at home. But I'm told that because I use a wheelchair, oh, you can sit here. So she said, right from the beginning, I'm sort of put in my place, and not just located, but really put in my place. And on the one hand, she says, I should be grateful that they've anticipated and they've thought of a level place, maybe with a better vantage point. But on the other hand, I can't always sit with my friends. I can't always choose to sit down front, or, you know, and sometimes people will avoid coming up and speaking to me because they don't know. The chair really becomes a barrier sometimes, not to getting around, but to socialization. It would be more polite to ask, you know, where would someone like to sit? And the fact that we, many places don't have fixed seating anymore, might give room for wheelchair users to have more freedom, more options. One person talked about in the cathedral, the wheelchair designated space is right down the front and on the left-hand side. Well, if other people don't want to sit down front, then there you have a wheelchair user sitting all by themselves down at the front. And when it's time to greet and meet and whatever, people often don't want to go down that far because, you know, but they don't necessarily want to move because they might get caught out when it's time for everyone to retake your seats. And so there's all these little things that I never thought of before.
Thank you very much, Jill. And this has been really informative. And I think that it will certainly be the reason for a spark in thinking about what to do and helping people to understand each other. And
thank you for inviting me. This is beautiful.
And just a quick note for the people who are interested in the sessions with Titi Pounamu, Study and Joy. Our next session will be an evening presentation on Zoom with Tom O'Loughlin, Professor Thomas O'Loughlin, and Brother Kieran Finn. It will be on Monday, the 22nd of August, 7 to 8:30. In the evening, Mary of Nazareth, Her Sacred Life and Her Human Life. All events are on my website at www.studyjoy.nz. Kia kaha and keep safe. And thank you, Jill.
You're very welcome.